to a very special episode of the Art of Fantasy podcast. It's just me and Zach, isn't it, here? Zach?
It is. It's Art of Fantasy Nights.
Ooh, Art of Fantasy Nights.
Art of Fantasy Nights.
This is where we're going to do some real sexy roleplay.
We're going to sexy roleplay from the astral plane.
Do you reckon that would be the worst thing that you and I could do if we went... Like, if we were just like, let's bin Pads and Liam... If we suddenly turn this into like...
If we turn it into like
podcast.
A late night... The thing is, no, I don't think that would be the worst thing we could do. I think you and I would have a hilarious time doing it.
Yeah.
What would be an issue is that like when people listen to it, they'd think we're doing a serious thing. They wouldn't know the kind of context.
They wouldn't get the joke.
No. And I think that would be... That's potentially troubling for you and I. But no, I don't think it would be that. I think it would be quite funny to make a kind of late night radio show host version of D&D.
Man, do you know what? I many times in a week will think, I reckon I could write like fantasy porn. You know what I mean? I reckon I could write fantasy smut.
Yeah, honestly... I'm not a writer. You're a writer. I'm not a writer.
I reckon you could.
I reckon I could. Yeah. I've read. So I obviously was fairly injured fairly recently, and as part of that kind of injury, I wasn't a lot of like walking. So there's a lot of reading. I read the fucking what's it called? A Court of Thorn and Roses.
Oh right. Yeah.
Which have you read that?
Sarah Maas. I have to admit, I read a bit of it and I had to put it down.
Yeah. You know why? Because it's written by a fucking 16-year-old girl. and then I remember reading it thinking like, this feels and sounds like it was written by a 16-year-old girl. Yeah. Not in a disparaging way to 16-year-old girls, and plenty a lot of them are really good. And she was clearly
she's making a killing from
decent,
it. So,
also, yeah. Like fair play being a writer, like being kind of a commercial level writer at the age of 16, you gotta have something about you. That being said, a 16-year-old boy or girl isn't good at writing because they've only lived for 16 years. They're just crap at it.
And also particularly writing about shagging when they probably haven't done a lot
and
of
so
it.
And like, so I was reading it thinking like, this is a weird vibe for a book. And I Googled it and I was like, oh no, she was like 15 when they got published. I was like, oh sweet, that makes so much. I'm so much more comfortable with this now than I was before thinking that there's an adult out there that like constructs sentences that way. Like the main character, what's her name? The main character is called like, all right, yeah, this is hilarious. It's about fairies fucking, right? Yeah. So there's like human world, fairy world.
Yeah.
There's a girl that's from the human world, crosses over to the fairy world. There's plot points that happen in between that. She ends up banging a fairy.
Okay.
Yeah?
Skips the end, she's shagging a fairy.
The character who's from the human world to the like the fairy world is called Feyre.
Oh.
So she's like... That's clearly some sort of like, not necessarily symbolism, because I don't think we can call symbolism if you just kind of move a word, like a letter around. But like,
if you just make it the same
like,
word.
But to the point where it actually confused me when I was reading the book, I was like, but wait, why does this girl care about the Feyre? I thought the Fey were a thing. Why the Feyre in the show? And I, like, it wasn't until someone was like, no, she's called Feyre. And I was like, oh, odd choice for a main character.
And yet, she's made the money.
It's hard to argue with someone. But then you look. But then we read a lot of stuff like Piers Brown, where I can't get over how good at writing that man is.
Yeah.
Despite his age, and despite the fact that like the first book we read was nowhere near as good as the last set of books that have come out. But at the same time, for a first published novel, I'm like, dude, you shouldn't be as good at this because you've written Roman fantasy sci-fi Warhammer. And it's somehow like incredibly readable.
Yeah, you're right. You on paper, you're like, that could go any way. But
so I do think, push comes to shove, you ever hard up against it, you could write
hard up.
You could write a fairy fuck book.
That hard up being the phrase. Yeah.
What would be your kind of creature of choice? That
I don't know. I don't want to think about that because there's nothing.
It's crossed your mind.
It actually hasn't. I think it would be. We don't need to go into this now. I think like normal person finds themselves in bizarre world, a bit like Court of Thorn and Roses. But I know what I'm not into, and I say that as my dog is in the room, not into werewolves. Something about that.
That's weird. I don't understand why it's become so prevalent that like werewolves and vampires have like become like a thing that pop culture really lean into. When like the obvious metaphor there is old man, young flesh. That's the obvious, or inner beast.
Well,
and then,
I think
and
inner
then
beast
abusive
to,
relationship. Like that. Why is that something that latched onto, but yet somehow has survived Me Too in a way that doesn't seem to be
because
touchable
it exists
by
in
culture.
Like the safe fantasy space. I think it's funny. So I don't know. I need to think really carefully about it. But yeah. There's money to be made.
There's a lot of money to be made.
Yeah. But there's something about the bestial stuff. I'm like, it gets really
it's
super
into, weird.
It gets really into the mechanics of like...
Akatar's a bit like that.
Yeah, right?
It's like he's like a beautiful human fairy man, but then his fairy form is like a Beauty and the Beast style animal. You're like, cool. So you into that then? Is there like a kind of crossover?
Oh yeah.
Is that? I don't know. That,
they're
yeah.
into that.
I don't know. It's what would be funny is if you wrote a fairy porn book, but you did it from the perspective of like really, like almost like the Matrix style, like through the fourth wall of like it's all to do with someone's really specific kink, like their whole thing. Like you know the in like certain that were certain. Gross types of anime where like, the tentacle one anime like where the guy is like it's because he's into that thing that becomes the kind of like the overarching metaphor later in the
I love
cartoon.
You're talking about this stuff like we all watch this up, but I think you need to
but the thing is we all know what I'm talking about as well because most of our audience would I would think
yeah
maybe not
let us know folks
let us know
yeah
this got into this happens so quickly.
I know we got to a weird spot and I think it's what is it was funny because Pads and I did this episode in lockdown and it was weird for those reasons and we were both like going a bit mad whereas we've got no excuse like this is just a normal day.
I also my problem with this particularly is that because it's a room like there's microphones in front of me like right now but like also because it's you and it's Paddy and it's Liam and also because of the type of person that I am I don't think the audience understand that like I'll talk about anything unfiltered talk about anything like we could have we've veered into like weird fantasy kink. We could have easily veered into like neo-Nazism and I would still have been like happy talking about it. And I forget that we eventually show this to other people.
To be very clear, listeners, Zach is talking about the academic study of and cultural criticism of neo-Nazism.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not like pro it. Like, that'd be wild.
I just wanted to clear that up.
Like, but in the same way that hopefully, as you understand, I'm not pro tentacle porn either. But I think it serves as it's an interesting mirror to hold up to ourselves. Like, that's an interesting thing for society to reflect upon.
I think our listeners will know this. But if you're a new subscriber listening to this episode first, hello.
also, like, if you are... Don't stop. Go back. This will make no sense. I'm part of this and have been for a long time. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 45 minutes.
You need 48 previous episodes of context. By the way, isn't it quite nice that next episode, episode 50, is going to be a boss battle against Draka?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
So where does this then fall into
this
that
is 49.
Chronology?
This is
49. This is a whole episode?
Yeah, this will be a whole episode. Yeah.
I was kind of prepping myself for the ego hit of like the 50th episode being about me. But no, it makes sense.
It's still about
your
character.
I mean, it's all about all of us. No, it's true. There's a big
problem. We're going to... Hey, this is
where
we get to.
Nice symmetry to that as well.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's unintentional. It's just because it took us a while to get there.
Because we fucked up the recording so many times.
Listen, let's get into this weird episode. For our listeners, you'll know kind of what's coming up. But Draka, you may not. I'm calling you Draka now, as if it's your name.
Yeah. So that was just at me, was it? Okay, fine. No, I don't know what's happening, actually.
You, Draka the character, may not know what's happening.
I don't know what's happening, and also, as I came in, you kind of flagged it. I remember I did listen to the episode with Paddy, but that was a long time ago. And so I've kind of come into this, you know, this is just... The last thing I remember... is that I tried to do something cool and kind of fucked it, and then now I'm unconscious. That's kind of what happened.
Well, let's find out, shall we?
Let's do it.
So, as you said, the last thing you remember is Teddy, you falling back, the percussive force of the Javelin of Lightning, flinging you away from Zraka just as you're about to spring the trap. You sort of brace yourself in that well-trained reflex you have before you hit the ground, but somehow you keep falling down, away from your comrades, into the depths of, well, it's somewhere. Maybe more accurately, it's nowhere. For a minute, a moment, a fleeting second, in this sort of flash before your eyes, you're filled with a memory of your previous life. You're out on the open plains with your ward band as a young half-orc. And in that moment, Zach, what do you think is Zraka's kind of fondest memory from that time?
Ooh, fondest memory from the kind of the war band days.
This you was, know, roaming the plains.
Yeah, because we said
people.
It kind of up that Draka's particular brand of half-orcishness was a kind of nomadic, like almost Mongolian steppe vibe.
Yes.
Without like mounts, but like, yeah, they were out and roaming and they were a raiding war band. I think I would imagine from that period of time, it would probably be I think in my head that those kind of this particular warband or that or the kind of steppe style half orcish culture that Draka comes from does have a sort of rite of passage kind of vibe to it, where like whether it be Native American or it might be the Predator, like the
those two
touch points. No, like, there are a lot of cultures that will have this, but the idea that you have to grow up as an adolescent and train with the tribe, and then you have to go off and achieve a feat and then come back to the tribe a fully fledged tribe member.
Yeah.
I think it's probably, I'm imagining for him, it's probably the successful accomplishment of that coming of age moment. I think that's what it is.
So it's kind of the moment of returning.
Yeah, it's like it's coming back realized as an adult rather than a kind of a learning adolescent. You know, that status that comes with it, but then also just the achievement and the, I assume, like bloodlust that comes with. Well, I'm assuming this was some sort of war/hunt based achievement.
Yeah, I imagined it a bit. I definitely imagined it quite hunty, and I imagined you maybe coming back, lifting aloft some trophy.
Yeah.
I think it's some kind of, we haven't really talked about a lot of the flora and fauna of this world, but maybe a wolf, maybe some kind of dire wolf.
Yeah, I think some sort of big apex predator you have to go and take it on.
Yeah, no weapons, maybe, I'm thinking. It's your bare hands.
Or in fact, to other cultural touch points, like the whole Spartan, sort of like go out into the Laconic Hills and then with nothing but a spear and come back having killed a wolf. That kind of myth. Rite of passage. That's what we're talking about.
And maybe this is the moment, you know, you remember in this kind of moment of falling into wherever you're falling. Yes, glorious, bloodstained, triumphant, and welcomed and made brought into the family.
I think that's part of it. I think it's important to remember, like, I've done this particularly, but like, we've made a lot of jokes, but it's like Draka as being, he's the tank of that initial level 20 group. And it's like, you know, he's the war-crazed berserker, but that all comes from that, you know, in this instance, the coming of age, it's essentially the acceptance into the society that he's grown up within but adjacent to, and then you get accepted. It's acceptance, that's the thing, I think.
Yeah, and also I guess a bit of a mastery over nature, you know, maybe not mastery, you know, working alongside it. I think then it is yeah, something that kind of fills you with a moment of comfort. You forget the kind of the strife you're in for a moment. And then, you know, it's like that feeling when you fall asleep and then you jolt awake and you awake with a start. You find yourself staring out across a shimmering, silvery sea. You are bobbing in midair in this silvery place. A gentle current is sort of pushing at your form. You look down to it, and actually now you take a second, you expecting to see probably, you know, Teddy's humanish form, but it's something in between. In fact, it's probably a lot closer to how Zraka looks. You know, there's still something of Teddy in there, but whatever form you've taken here in this place is more Zraka-like. The only other thing you can notice is immediately across from you, there is another figure also floating in this nothingness. However, where you are sort of left your own devices, they are sitting cross-legged, eyes closed in apparent relaxation. You can see that they're a dwarf of some years, advanced years. They've got ginger hair that's just starting to fade through grey into white, but it's fixed in these incredible, mighty braids that run down their very broad, dwarvish head, and then it loops through lots more complicated ones in their beard as well. And as per in this place, which you will probably recognise having been here before, the astral plane, there are objects floating in the sky, strange bits of scenery. And you can hear somewhere far off the call of some kind of cosmic creature. It's low and sad, but it's just the two of you. Why don't you give me a perception check while you're floating here?
All right, give you a perception check.
You do one of these.
Thank fuck, because I've actually got no idea how to interpret that with my human brain. So let's see if the dice help. It's a 12 plus...
some stuff.
Something. Skills...
yeah,
deception is plus one. Or it's 13 total.
13.
Glad
okay.
You waited for that, listener.
With the 13, it's enough to. You don't get everything. You get a few things. First of all, this man's familiar to you.
Ooh.
You can't really put your finger on why. Something about the way he holds himself is very controlled and refined. It screams military training to you.
Okay.
You didn't need a 13 for this. He's also missing his right hand.
Oh.
And you did need a 13 for this. Despite his eyes being closed, they flutter open briefly, and you see that this man is probably blind. His eyes are missing.
Oh. As in the entire eyeball?
Yeah. As the sockets are empty. And yet, as you sort of stir in front of him, you can sense that he knows you're there. He can practically see you.
Okay. So he's willfully ignoring me rather than... rather than hasn't noticed me.
I'd say for now, yeah.
Okay, all right, fine.
What do you want to do?
He's in a current meditative state.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Yeah.
And he's just kind of floating.
Just with you here.
I think before... I tell you what, before I engage him, I'd like to float with the same serenity. I'd like to try and match his sort of like... Zen like mastery of the astral plane. Like that's my first reaction. If I've seen someone else doing something better than me, yeah.
I absolutely love that. Give me a performance check, clearly.
Performance, okay.
Yeah, right. This is you are faking this. Let's
okay,
be clear.
All right, fine. Am I? Alright, I'm using the app because I've got a plus six in this. Ooh. All right, it's a 17 total.
Oh, okay, it's pretty good. Yeah, I think it's a good simulacrum of kind of concentration. Yeah, you adopt the pose.
Not so much the concentration of it, but the appearance
exactly.
Of physical serenity.
Yeah,
my mind is racing.
I also like to think that while this guy is, you know, this is like a three-dimensional space, right? He is still, and you do it, and you just can't help. You're like turning.
Yeah,
really
I'm listing very, very slowly to a particular. I'm like, I'm perfectly still, apart from the times where I have to readjust my angle to get back to like being on a sort of level playing field.
And I think he, you know, sits there in silence for a second longer, and as you start to take the kind of the second 360 degree turn.
Wait, no, if I'm not correcting, I'm just going back around.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, I meant to do this.
A full rotation takes a minute.
He says, "So you found me. That's really what you're like." And his eyes open, and you now see for certain there is nothing in there.
What am I, just for the purpose of the rest of this, am I doing this? Am I in Teddy's voice or Draka's voice? Because they're both an effort for me.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you can tread a middle ground if you like, but the projection of yourself, your soul, is here.
Yeah.
That is more Draka-y.
Okay.
It's up to you where that lands. Maybe it lands in the middle. Maybe it's more on the Draka side.
All right.
This is
land a little bit
soul.
On the
your soul
side.
Is here rather than your body.
Then I think I'm going to go with, okay. Draka had an aggressive, like, yeah. And yeah. Teddy's got the opposite, which is like, hello.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately actually might just be me. Actually, that might be my middle ground.
we cracked it, everyone.
So what do they say? He said, this is what you're like.
Your film is, this is what you're really like.
Really like? What do you mean, really like?
Oh, I like that. That's good.
What
That's
are you
good.
Like?
What am I like? That's a good question. and he just lets it hang. Yeah,
great. Yeah,
are you asking me what I'm like?
Well, I'm more intrigued to think what preconceptions you had of me before I sat down and nailed this meditative state.
That you did. And he says, well, I thought of you as impressive, right? And strong. I can say that having lived as you for quite a while, that's...
I think I'm spinning slightly quicker now. Yeah.
Oh, and very good rotationally as well. having lived as you for a while, I think that's true. Your reputation was for being fearsome and unreasonable, and I can see I've felt a bit of that in your shoes, but you look a bit more refined than I was expecting. I thought you'd come in here and want to rip my head off, but there you are.
It's fair to say I spent some time living in other shoes or in someone else's circumstance and happenstance, and that's you know, it's expanded my worldview.
Oh, aye. Well, when I first saw you on the ship, I thought you might be something to do with the original hosts. Not that it matters now, anyway, for you. I mean, what are you going to do? Displace me? I don't believe you can. Well, I'm the one. To be clear, I'm the one inside your body right now.
I've got that.
I just thought for anyone who might be listening in on this, to be clear.
Okay, interesting. All right, well, the thing is, and what one thing that doesn't ever sort of go away entirely is the there's a very clear response to a challenge that I'm currently fighting back, and you said displace me as if that was what I came here to do, and that made very clear I just woke up, but I'm also if I have to displace you to get back to my body, I will do that. It's interesting to think that you've immediately made that quite confrontational. And this is me not responding to the confrontation.
Oh, if I knew you better, I'd say that was considerable growth. No, I don't believe that's the only way out. I think the material plane will take over before long. For some reason, fate has seen it fit to give us this moment. Time acts very strangely here, so I don't suppose long will pass at all, but maybe it's a chance for us to talk, I guess. I don't know.
I'd rather talk.
You shan't be surviving this encounter, I assume so. You know. Not this one.
I remember that.
This one right now, yes.
Oh, I understand. It's interesting. I remember this from my days in that body. There is a certain confidence that comes with that martial prowess. Mm. I'll be perfectly honest, I miss it to a point. But I'm interested to know how you are currently sat there, but also why you sat there.
Ah, those are good questions. I am sat here because all of us sits here in some form. This is the way of our inner selves. Not everything exists in flesh and blood. And I've been here as long as I can remember. Longer, actually, than I can remember. Why am I occupying your vessel? Well, it was the one chosen for me by a friend.
This friend being Vandra, I'm assuming.
Ah, so you know her!
We've had a passing... A very brief, long time ago passing encounter. But this was ordained, was it? It was preordained. You decided that this was all part of a plan?
Oh, well, it was a plan, absolutely. But it didn't go according to plan, I'll tell you that. Okay. There was something quite strange. No, I had to fight quite hard to get this, and it wasn't given to me on a plate. And Vandra, well, you did a number on her, for sure. We are still making attempts to rectify that. Yes.
Well, we've gone quite far without any real formal introductions. You clearly know who I am, or who I was born into.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I'm assuming you then now know who I am currently in the material world. So, I mean, who the fuck are you?
My name. Most recently, I was called Bardolph as I strolled these lands, but I am much older than that. I'm not from these lands. I'm not from the Strael Isles. Wanderer from far away. We came here with my friends. There were five of us, and I'll show you if you like. And he holds out his hand. And all I want to do is, we came here to restore what should have been and to stop the cycle.
Okay, the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
He's holding his hand out. This is, yeah. Okay, this is going different how I thought it would be.
Ah.
You
thought it was going to be a fight?
Not necessarily a fight. I thought it would be a more straightforward... a more straightforward objective in that sense of like, okay, well, this guy's in my body, I have to just get him out of my body.
Mm-hmm.
Versus say, I actually it probably says something about both me and the character that I threw up that it didn't necessarily occur to me. It might have been a reason why. So I actually, yeah, I think definitely with all of Teddy's sort of influence on this person that is both, as you say, currently I am the soul that is both between the two of them. Teddy is definitely naturally more inquisitive than Draka was. And so I take the hand. I think I want to know, because I think I was assuming that it would be a very simple, when I was confronted with my body or my Draka or this opportunity, it would be like, okay, cool. Well, I just need to reclaim that. I don't think both neither Teddy or Draka would have ever considered the ramification of, like, for example, I genuinely don't think Draka would have thought that when he leaves Teddy's body, I think it's only now occurring to him, well, yeah, but what happens to this body? That I've clearly, and it's, I think in this conversation, he's probably noticing that he's no longer the same Draka. And if this was the real world, he'd require a lot of therapy. But
yeah, when we set out to start doing this, you know, we didn't really think about, maybe we're all just a bit older and wiser, and
we didn't ever consider that we created a metaphor for the duality of self.
Our own mental, you know, distress over the years. Yeah, yeah. You know, the implications are much stronger.
Ooh.
Okay, well, yeah, let's go down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I think he'd like to know. I think he wants to know what their deal is, because they're not... They are what I think he thought they were was very much just a foe.
And
even in that very short interchange, it's been made very clear that they're not just a foe or an obstacle or a malicious force. I want to know what the deal is.
Okay. Well, his hand is there.
I touch it. Do I have to roll for that?
No, but you do need to roll for this. It's a very strange sensation, one that Glitch, in a similar experience, you felt almost identically. There's a jolt of sharp pain. Though you don't really have a body with which to feel it, this stream of images and sounds and smells and tastes and emotions starts to course through you as soon as you touch this hand. For a second, you're still with him here. You're with Bardolph in this place. And then you lose yourself in a flurry of images that come on far too quickly to focus on. People, places, objects flash past your eyes without your comprehension. Unless you can concentrate hard, give me a wisdom saving throw.
Ooh, a wisdom. Oh, it's a saving throw. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I do have pluses on saving throws.
Yes.
Oh, you know what, Laurie?
Yeah?
Oh, wait, no. Oh, I thought that... Oh, my God, I thought that was a one. It's not. It's a 7 plus 1 plus another 1. So it's 9 total.
9 is not enough to save you from something that's quite distressing, I think, for you to see.
Plus 3.
Oh, okay.
Plus 3. So it's a 7 plus 1 plus 8. That's 8 plus 3, 11.
That's actually literally the threshold.
Yes! Yes, I can read apps.
So instead, you see this briefly. You walk alongside a man covered in wounds and sores. The two of you stride behind a tall, muscular man in shining plate armor, the very vision of heroicism. The landscape around you is familiar, but the architecture is unrecognizable. It's all straight edges, gleaming spires, bizarre engravings, angles. There are crystalline structures everywhere. It is gleaming and golden, not at all the Folster Isles. Folster Isles are, you know, Strail Isles rather, you know, grimy, you know, grimecore British. This is not that. This is like elven ruins.
So is this a different place or is this a prehistory?
This, who could say? You would have to roll a lot better on the save to me to give you that.
Yeah,
and in this vision, you arrive at a stunning pagoda. You greet a woman more beautiful than any of you have ever laid eyes upon. And then with a snap, that same kind of jolt of falling sensation, you blink your eyes open and you know that today is the day. The day that she finally puts it all into motion. You stand in a form that you've grown to hate. It is that of a beggar on the street, one who people try to ignore as best they can, but it is you, dwarven, ginger-haired, rough-handed. But the ailments that you carried with you in your first life do have a habit of manifesting themselves each other one you take. Your eyes are already growing roomy with age, rheumatic with age. Your right hand is stiff and losing its strength already. But it is the day today. You finish scouting the tower for her. You can see the three figures coming now. The gleaming dragonborn, the graceful pirate queen, and the mercenary. You know that one of the others has eyed the mercenary up for themselves. But truly, there would be no more fitting vessel than him for someone of your caliber. You wait to check your pocket watch. It's time to move. You need to get to the tower so that Vandra's spell will have the required effect. But the streets are packed and busy. How are you going to get there, Zach?
Am I Bardolph or am I...
You are indeed Bardolph.
I'm now Bardolph. They're packed and busy.
Yeah, this is Vel. The streets of Vel. It's the day of this. Do you remember when
this is the first episode. Yeah, no, I get this. Packed and busy. I'm a street beggar though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. I move through the crowd. Lithe and light. So you know when someone's very good at never being seen, they also get very good at moving between space.
I think that's
what I'm relying on to get to the the tower.
Kind of leaning into
I have an idea of what my time frame is?
To get to the tower, you have to get there.
Yeah.
Why don't you give me a history check? See if you can recall
that. All right. Give you a history check for you. It's a 12. My history check. Rolling a lot of midi. Fucking like, you know, this is right in the
zone.
The average roll sweet spot.
I think. You know that it's not a matter of precise timing. You know that if those three are heading up to the tower, it's only a matter of time before they get there and start, you know...
Fucking shit up.
Start fucking shit up. So you need to get into position sharpish.
All right. And it's about, what, like a mile, 2 miles?
Yeah, maybe not quite that far. Maybe more like a mile, yeah.
All right, a mile. I hug the Underdark, as it were, and just kind of move as quickly as I can through the sort of gutters and the small squeeze spaces. I'm a dwarf as well, right?
Yeah,
so I'm broad,
should be pretty easy.
But I'm tiny, so I can just get underneath stuff.
Give me a stealth check to see how easy you can do that.
Oh, I'm doing. Oh, it's stealthy as well. I'm not just trying to get there.
Well, if you're like, you know, you're kind of sticking to the shadows a little bit, I think that's the best roll.
All right.
I can approximate.
This is my worst trait, and it was a 9.
I think with a 9, you know, you try to slip past unnoticed, but you attract the attention of some rough hooligans on the street.
Okay.
Who I think, you know, the first gang of them, you manage to slide past without too much, you know.
Yep.
Any fisticuffs, the next lot do start on you and they push you down. They give you a bit of a kicking and you feel a simmering resentment that you've had for, it feels like centuries.
Yeah.
Just gets a little bit stronger, but you suck it up because you know it's going to be worth it. And despite that troublesome journey, you arrive at the Tower of Burr just in time to see Vandra take her full draconic form, spewing fire into the sky, up at the three heroes, and scattering debris into the kind of the air from the top of this tower down onto the townsfolk below where you are. And you feel a bit of pride, a bit of excitement. You think, she's fucking done it. She's because we're going to fucking do it. However, one particularly large piece of this masonry crashes down and into the upper floor of the building just next to you, collapses the beams in the roof, and when the dust clears, you see that someone has been trapped underneath these huge splinters of wood. There's a child crying, pulling at the sleeve of the unconscious figure trapped there. He lies pinned down under the fallen building. Do you do anything?
I don't know Bardolph. I don't know what his vibe is. It doesn't sound like he's inherently evil. Like, he's downtrodden and maybe particularly angsty about his lot in life currently, but not inherently callous.
Whatever you feel is right, man. This is why it's up to you.
Yeah, it's got to, it's got to be I try and get the unconscious person out.
Okay, give me how are you doing it? Just sort of hefting them out? Or?
No, they're under a beam of some kind.
Yeah, two beams. The whole building's collapsed. They're underneath a couple of beams.
I want to find a suitably strong piece of wood or beam or something to lever the other beam up, rather than just try and beast it.
Okay. Yes, I like that. It's very clever. It's like, you know, I'm trying to think what kind of a roll that would be.
Should I roll and try to see if I can find something?
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
And then if anything else, so I'll just do a
investigation.
Really, I'm leaning into all of the things that I have plus zero on at the moment. That's another 9.
Oh yeah, I think with a 9, you find something good, but in this form, which I said, you know, is weakening, this hand is already failing back to, like I say, the kind of old wounds you've had since the beginning of your life, even in this new vessel. It takes you a while.
Yeah.
And I think by the time you come back to the scene with this wedge in hand, the form has stopped moving.
Okay.
Underneath.
Well, look, I gave it a fucking good go. The dice decided they died, not me.
I'm telling you, Zach, that this has happened already, so you don't need to feel bad.
Okay, fine.
But as you come back here, there's another shower of debris and dust falls, and a huge chunk of masonry narrowly misses you. You turn to look as the crowd start to cry, and amid the noises of chaos in them, you hear something else. A dragon's cry in pain as the huge form of Vandra falls from the tower, as you remember seeing yourself as Zraka down to the ground down atop the tower's perch, right, the very, very top of the tower where the three heroes are. Someone in the fracas bumps into you, sends you spinning off, shouts, "Watch it, cripple!" And others block your way, eager to see what's happened. You push through. The crowd is unrelenting. By the time you make it to the front, up at the Tower of Burr, your heart sinks because you know it hasn't worked. Three bloodied and bruised figures blink in the afternoon sun as they make their way down the ruined steps of the Tower of Burr. Two of them, the woman and the half-orc, look bewildered, beyond bewildered, completely out of body, you might say. They're examining their own hands, their arms, their feet, looking like they don't belong. The third, however, the towering dragonborn, grins widely and slyly and waves to the crowd with tears in their eyes as the manic grin takes hold. And with that thought, it hasn't worked. It hasn't bloody worked. You are back in the astral plane with that same lurch of weightlessness. And Bardolph remained sitting opposite you in their astral form, impassive. And that same keening noise calls out across the astral plane. And you're back here.
All right.
Tell me what are you thinking? I mean, you, Zach, so, what are you thinking?
What am I thinking, Zach?
Yeah.
Two main thoughts running through my head, which is... One, it doesn't sound like he got into that body, so I'm intrigued to know how he got into that body. And I still don't fully understand why, but I'd like to... Obviously, that's good. But then also, this other thing is, like, what's that? What's the sound? What's going on over there?
I can't believe it took us this long to get there. Give me a perception check.
Okay. We're doing it. Perception. It's a +1. Oh, for fuck's sake, Dart, it's a 4. I don't know what's going on.
Nah, okay, well, this is easy. I think, yeah, no, we're gonna leave it. Don't worry, I'll tell you. It's funnier this way, I think.
For fuck's sake. All right, fine.
And Bardolph says, well, now, that's part one, I think you'll say. That was what we were trying to do, but a spanner in the works somewhere.
Okay, I'm getting this, Bardolph. So, from what I can tell, you are some sort of time-traveling, constant presence that's embodied many a reincarnation. It's always been kind of shitty for you.
Yeah.
And so you've decided that to break the cycle, you would hijack other bodies with other lots in life and use that to your advantage to impose some sort of specific will over the world based on Vandra's madhap kind of worldview like this. I'm just getting a very classic incel vibe from you.
Well, now it's not. I'm not celibate, if that's what you're suggesting.
Oh, that's what incel does suggest, yes.
You didn't get out of my head. No. This is not something I chose. This is something that was foisted upon us, and I have no choice but to carry it through.
Who foisted it upon you, there?
That's a story. A long story. Let's say it was the gods. How about that?
Okay. So some form of pantheon gave you some sort of divine purpose, and you've been living out life after life after life, waiting for the moment to enact that purpose. And you think that you've finally cracked it, which is interesting. It's funny for you that you think you cracked it. I mean, ultimately, like...
Almost
cracked it. Okay, fine.
Almost.
Would there be potentially three unlikely barriers to that crack? Is that what's happening here? Because I don't pay that much attention to what the gold fucker does, but like it didn't work. So,
well, actually, he was the first one that he didn't need much convincing. Actually, that turned out a plan within a plan that I did not know about. That went rather wrong. Four years ago.
Fairly confident that the dragon board / the kind of goth elf is not working for you. So,
well, the goth elf, as you say, was an element unknown to me. A conspiring element.
I spent a lot of time with that element. That element's fucking wild card. So, I cannot imagine that was a good thing for you to fit him into your plans.
No. No, it was not my intention. But the one who was supposed to be taking on the gold one has been lost to us for millennia, let me say. Well, centuries. Maybe I'm being dramatic.
Oh, okay, fine. So you subbed someone in. That's interesting. And that's...
Someone else subbed themselves. Someone else in, let me see.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Well, the thing is, Bardolph, like, I'm learning a lot. It's fun. But, like, what's your end goal here, bro? Like, what do you think that's going to happen at the end of it? Do you think you're going to walk off into the sunset? What's going on?
We want to break the cycle. Make it never happen again. And he holds out his hand once more for you.
I take it, yeah, straight away.
And you have that same destabilizing feeling, images and sounds and sights and smells, and now you're ready for it. You, Teddy or Zraka, are ready for it. It is sometime later now, and you know that after those disturbances in Veld and after that business at the monastery, things have calmed down again. Plans have started to take root, and there's been, crucially, no sign of those... what did you call them? Complicating forces.
Unlikely barriers.
And you know that Ceres has failed with Cassius, but she's going to make her own way. She's always been good at that. Always looked out for herself. The rest of you must make your moves now. With
Ceres was the...
secured.
Ceres was the person in Cassius, right?
In Bloody John.
In Bloody John.
Yes.
Yes. Ceres was in Bloody John. And who was in Cassius again?
Glitch.
Glitch was in... Yeah, but Glitch is... So Glitch is the sub.
Yes, indeed.
And so was it supposed to be Ceres in Cassius?
I'm now invested in this story.
Yeah, yeah, we've been telling for a long time.
Bardolph doesn't know. Bardolph is like, there were like, that was not an element that he knew about.
Interesting.
The rest of you, as I said, must make your own moves. Now with vessels secured, you think of yourself, Bardolph, you think of Vandra, and you think of the third, who you are on your way to help. You know, the fourth has asked to be left alone. She wants no part of this anymore. And the fifth, as you just learned, Zach, is lost to time.
Okay.
So you stand before a dingy tower, deep in a dark ravine in the depths of the wild mountainous lands that cut across the belly of Falster Isle. In a dark ravine. Yeah. This is Falster Island. The main island where most of your adventures are taken. You are standing at the foot of this tower in this foreboding valley, named for the orcish chieftain who died, Balok, waiting for the door to be opened. And after a while, a man presents himself to you, opens the door. All right, pal, we're just getting ready. Come on, follow me. Oh, mind the stains. Something very strange happened here. We don't know. It's been a bit of a bloodbath. You right?
My bard off again.
Yeah.
How does bard off speak? That doesn't matter.
Scottish.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to. You can just do it in Chaka.
Hey, we fucking Bonnie time, lad. We're...
Yes, it's spot on, mate. Absolutely. Even my bad Scottish accent now. That's great. You make your way up the tower, deathly quiet, empty. You see several places where something has been removed. Enormous tanks, maybe. Scientific equipment. You're not sure. You come out eventually into a round room at the top of the tower, encircled in the dull crystal that you've noticed, Bardolph, and that Teddy and Zraka certainly noticed when they were here.
Yeah, because this is Bollocks Deep, listeners. This is Bollocks Deep. We made it a funny name, but it is Bollocks Deep.
It's canon. Here it's been polished into a fine glass. The three moons of this world are suspended in the night sky, their white light throwing the rest of the chamber into harsh relief. At one end of the room, you see a complicated array of gears and dials surrounding a long copper tube. Various lenses suspended across one end of it, pointing through part of that glass wall that is etched with various runes and inscriptions. You see a leather-bound chair bolted into the end. On it, someone has been strapped. That same woman, that pirate from Veld. How did they capture her? That's the thought you have. And the man who welcomed you in, disheveled sorcerer, black beard, scraggly back hair, says, "Bloody hell, you've no idea how hard it was to get her here. But anyway, we're all ready. Your Highness," and he points over to an orcish fellow standing there, multicoloured teeth glinting in the darkness.
I'm doing this with the listeners. This is so the Yorkshire fella, right?
Yeah, it's Fed Hoyle.
It's Fed Hoyle. Yep. And then the Your Highness is the fucking the half orc rogue,
the Duke.
All right. So Fed Hoyle, the Duke, Bardolph, Ceres, and someone else lost to time, and maybe another person, I can't count. They're not time travelers, but are they like the terrible Marvel's movies, the Eternals. They're the Eternals, aren't they? They're Eternals. That's what they are. Are they cursed to live without the hammer of time falling on them at some point, so they see the cycles of civilization rise and fall, and they're trying to fucking correct it by enacting some sort of fascist regime. Is that what we're talking about here?
I mean, maybe.
Maybe. All right, cool. That means yes.
And as you step closer to the woman strapped to this chair...
I trusted Fed Hoyle, you know? Like, I really thought he was on our
really
side.
You really did.
We never questioned that. Like, at any point during the recording of that, we were like, sweet, we've got a guy on our side. Not at any point did it occur to us.
It's because he was charming and from Yorkshire.
That was it. It was enough to convince all three of us to willingly, no bat an eyelid, give away all of our money.
Taryn, that woman in the chair, is she sounds panicked. She sounds strange. Her accent is this bizarre.
This is Taryn Taryn as well. Like, this is not...
Give me a perception check.
Yeah, right? I want to know if this is Taryn.
Or insight. Insight.
Yeah, check. I want to know if this is Taryn as in the Taryn that Draka knows.
Yes.
Or if it's Taryn as in the wrong person in Taryn or whatever that's going on there.
Give me that. Give me that perception. Insight.
Insight.
Check.
Oh,
is it another plus zero?
I've got a plus one.
Okay, that's nothing. That's not nothing.
It's a 19 plus one, though.
Hello. That's good, man. That's good. Well, there's something very familiar about what she's saying. I'm sorry. I have no idea who I am.
Oh, that's great. It's fucking Liam.
I don't. Please, team me back to the shop. Zebish, he knows who I am. He'll vouch for me. Honestly, honestly, you got the wrong person. And
that's why Taryn's been such a non-character throughout this like arc, is because it's actually still Liam.
Yeah, and Fed says, oh, bloody hell, I need to keep saying that they've got a potion shop or some nonsense. Yeah, I found them just skulking around. Look, this beautiful woman could do anything she wanted, and she was just crawling around in the sewers. Terrible, terrible business. No, we'll put... Don't worry, darling. And he sort of slaps her on the face gently and says, we'll sort you out. Are you ready, Your Highness? And the Duke just smiles and says, oh, I've been ready for quite some time. And he sits effetely in a chair next to
And he wants Taryn.
And...
Well, Taryn's form, not...
Well, no. Yes. And he... Fed looks at you and says, come on, mate, make yourself useful. Listen, there's a switch over here. If you turn that on, the pylons up top will take on storm energy from the sky. We'll run that current through here, and the energy will be enough to sever this one from this body. And, you know, old matey here can have what they want.
Oh, God. All right. So that's... Fuck. That means that Liam's eventual episode of one of these is going to be real intense, because he's going to decide to whether to kill off the character that he's been in.
Well, yeah.
What's his character called again?
Vatic?
Vatic, that's it. it's just, it's because it's just Liam. That's the hardest thing about it. It's Liam slipping
Liam, I apologise for that being a kind of impression of you caught in your other character's body.
Okay.
But, you know.
Wow, yeah, I guess, well, I mean, this has happened already, so I do it.
Not even, I was going to be like...
Well, because you told me whatever happens in this.
Yeah,
is
I know, but I did
okay, tell you what, I will say, though, I do it reluctantly. Like, I can see there's like a clear, and also in this particular instance, this is Draka as Teddy living out the memories of original Draka in this sort of, that Teddy knows Vatic, like he and out of the two prefers Vatic. Like, so I do think this is a struggle for me to do in the moment, regardless whether this actually happened in canon, and but in the moment this is a, for want of a better word, a bit of a glitch.
Hey. Why don't you give me we're gonna have a career a roll off.
All right.
I'm going to roll for Bardolph and you can roll for yourself.
Okay.
Charisma, just ability. So no skill, just get your charisma number from the top there. Whatever plus is under the... You know, right at the top of your character sheet where it's like your stats, charisma, strength.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just gonna go back on the app.
Yeah, and sorry.
To Teddy. And okay. So my charisma is plus +3. So my number is 17.
Yeah, so D20 plus +3. Roll me that.
D20 plus +3. Okay. Doing that classic with the die. So this is potentially quite big. That's a 9 plus 3.
Ooh, so I rolled a 10.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I think this is what happens. Even in this memory, and this is what really happened. Somehow, you know, the astral plane time works weirdly here. Somehow, some of your influence worked its way into the past here, because Bardolph reaches out to pull the switch, and then you, inhabiting him in this moment, in this memory, will the hand away. You wouldn't do this. You know, you recognize that voice as Vatic. It may not be the Vatic you know, but
I'm not gonna willfully kill him.
Exactly.
No. Yeah, absolutely.
And
not.
Fed says, bloody hell, Bardolph, come on, pull your finger off for fuck's sake. And he leaves the desk of dials and widgets, comes over, sort of shoves you in the shoulder, said, I have to do everything my fucking self. And he pulls down the switch.
Oh.
There is a flash of lightning. Vatic in Taryn's body screams with two voices, and in that flash of lightning, you're back in the astral plane opposite Bardolph.
fuck. You guys are... Oh, my God. What the... All right, Kate. All right. There's two things here. Maybe more things, but the two in my mind immediately is Bardolph, what the fuck's your game here? Like, what are you... Like, how on earth could you justify any of this? What is the actual goal? Like, what are you doing? We met Fed. He was fine. He was fine at the time. We didn't ever think that there was going to be a fucking this or that or a fight. What's going on?
Fed is one of the worst people I've ever met. He has done a lot of terrible things in his life. He's not one of us. I will not be tarred with his brush. He's just, you know, what do you call them? The Duke, aye? The Duke's got horrible contacts, you know. They got no qualms. Something about being, something about their previous life means they're happy to make those decisions, right? All I want to do is break the cycle. I don't want to do this anymore.
Bardolph, I have a real easy fucking way for you to break the cycle.
Oh, aye.
Die. Why can't you die?
And he laughs. He says, that would be nice.
Yes,
that
it would
be lovely.
It's also completely natural. It's what we all fucking do. It's what everyone does ever. It's the only constant. What do you mean you got to break the cycle? If you want to die, we could deal with that right now.
Oh, I'm sure.
We could sit down right now. Develop a way, like, we'll get back out into the material plane and I'll fucking kill you if you really want to do it.
That's so good. And he says, I wish it were that simple. And as he does, that wailing noise is even louder now. And despite this sound going on throughout these flashbacks, and because of your awful perception role, it's only now that you turn, because you were rotating with your eyes closed the whole time, you turn behind you and you see a ghostly figure that I think fills you, Zraka, with disgust immediately, because it is
interesting,
unmistakably, the gangly, less heroic figure of a human man with a posh chin.
Oh.
Wearing what you remember waking up in for the first time. A kind of hero's outfit. Remember, he kind of had an apron with all the flyers in.
He created himself like his own little kind of, not like a doublet, but like a kind of, what I imagine, as if now a child that has a Premier League idol made their own Premier League kit rather 100%. Than buying one. It's like that.
100%. And he's got, like, I even think he's still got, like, the rolls of posters stuck in the pockets here and the little thing of paste and Steady Teddy.
Yeah.
Is there crying pitifully.
Okay.
Please, please get me out of here. It's been terrible.
Yeah. Does he engage with me? Is he kind of like a spectral projection that it's just like, I can't, it's like a thing that's there, but I can't interact
with
it?
No, this is in much the same way the Bardolph is here. This is a real person here. He is engaging with you, but he's not, he is lost.
He hasn't got the mental fortitude to.
He's not really, but he sees you as someone else and he's sort of looking imploringly at you, but he is.
Oh, lad, I know you. How long you been here, boy?
Oh, I don't know. Time's really weird here.
You in pain?
I'm just sad.
Okay.
A bit bored, actually.
No, that tracks.
Are mummy and daddy okay?
They're fine. They're fine. Everything's fine.
I don't know why this is so funny to me.
Honestly, it's fine. You've got, in fact, it's actually going all right for you. Well, genuinely, lad, it's going quite all right.
Really?
Yeah, no, you're honestly doing all right. You've got a couple of mates, wife, kids.
A wife? Children?
Mum and dad are both fine, I think.
Yeah, I don't
and
think
also
we...
as well, you've got a booming publican business. Well, your wife does.
Selling alcohol?
Yes, to lots of people.
Oh, dear.
No, it's fine.
Oh, mummy won't be happy about that.
She's honestly fine.
Is that a deception role?
I genuinely can't remember the parents of the character I created. So.
No, I don't think... I think we only encountered them very briefly. James, Robert, Jim, Bob Windsor, and Eliza Windsor, of course. R.I.P.
Oh, yeah.
Eliza Windsor.
Eliza Windsor.
Damn, man. Yeah, give me a deception check.
That joke's age bad, isn't it? yeah, okay, give you a perception check.
A deception.
A deception check, sorry.
You're
deception.
Lying to this poor boy.
I am. It's a 16 plus, it's a 19 total.
90, yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, he's not hard to fool.
No, he's fine.
He buys it, hook, line, and sinker. It's, oh, good. Well, when you have a chance, if you can... I don't know who you are, kind sir. He says, kind sir, and sort of looks you up and down and says, yes, kind sir.
Yes, kind sir, it's fine.
If there's any way to bring me home with you, I would most appreciate it.
I promise I'm working on it. I'm currently figuring out, you know, what's going on, but I do have a plan for you to not stay here.
All right.
And I think I'd like to turn to Bardolph at this point, and I think without knowing the full scope of why they are doing what they're doing, from that, you know, as a kind of gang, that will come in time, I'm sure. But without knowing that and understanding Bardolph's very clear kind of not, he's clearly affiliated, but like he's clearly unhappy with how they're doing stuff. And he just wants to break the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I think I want to turn to him with a proposition.
Okay, please do. You just hear in the background.
You just, it's all right, lad. We'll work it out.
Okay. And he just sort of floats.
And I think
I want to
Bardolph, there's a clear lot of context here that I might not have. And you've said a number of times, break the cycle. And I've jokingly suggested that you can break the cycle by just stop fucking doing what you're doing. But if you've been alive for this long and you just want an end to this game, how about we swap back? We swap back nice and easy. But you get this lad, and I guarantee you this lad will break the cycle. And the reason I can say that is because I've lived in his shoes for long enough to understand that all this lad's got going on, he is not in any way gonna be a fixture of the ages. The centuries of songs written about him, that's not what's going on.
Quietly
with this lad
from the back, you hear, hey.
But he's a good lad, and he's got a nice wife, a good couple of kids, one kid. But one kid. And if you want the cycle broken, end your days in peace, end your days with the mundane, the simple, and just die. And I'm not saying we need anyone to kill. He doesn't need to be violent, but I have both in my new life and my old life killed many, many people and brought many things to an end abruptly before their time. But I've also seen plenty, as a result of that heroic action, get to live beyond the abrupt ending that fate might have had for them. And you can just quietly wander off into existence. And what the lovely thing about wandering off into existence is, particularly for you being some sort of fucking eternal spirit, is existence is finite. You'll be fine. You don't have to... Why are you fucking around with taking people from one island to another island on a slave ship? This is mental. What you're describing is mental. And you've maybe overcomplicated your particular circumstance. There's a really easy way out here. And unfortunately, he does look like that. But he's fine. He's having a great time. And so maybe that's how we break this cycle, rather than maybe breaking the world to its your will, whatever the fuck you're doing with Vandera. We could do that together.
You know what I'm going to ask you?
I'm going to have to roll some sort of check,
aren't
I?
Persuasion check.
It is a persuasion check.
It's a beautiful speech, my friend.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the dice decide.
I know, the dice decide. And this dice is a plus six, so I'm imagining this is going to be a straight seven total. All right, you know what? It's a 22 total. It's a 16 plus 6.
Okay. It's a good roll. It's a good roll. And it's such a good roll that Bardolph, his sightless eyes remain open. And you can feel your words hit something in him. And when you talk about just letting go, living out your days in peace, you see a slump to his shoulders, a relaxation of that military readiness, that, you know, martial switched onness. And suddenly he looks, I mean, he looks fairly aged for a dwarf, but suddenly in that moment, he looks ancient. The lines in his face grow even deeper. And he locks you, his sightless eyes, he locks your eyes in his sightless eyes and says, "Aye, that would be the perfect way to end it. But I cannot die," he says. "But I think you will." And he holds his hands aloft in a triangle and, boom, you know, Doctor Strange style, sends out a wave of psychic energy. You are thrown back. Teddy says, "No!" behind you. And you are have that falling backwards motion once more. And you are struck with one final flash as you return from the astral plane. You stand next to Taryn, now filled with the mind, the soul of your old accomplice, the Duke. You feel, even now, animosity towards them. They are not who you thought they were when you started this. Ever since that last cycle, they have lost your trust forever.
Interesting.
But they turn and grin at you. And you look upon the many, many people gathered here, beleaguered, lost, but happy to have a purpose on this storm-ridden island. They are constructing the machinery that you'll need under Fed's guidance, rigging up the same equipment as you had in the tower, but with many, many times more power, more complicated aspects, more engineering. Fed shouts something from a control panel. His eyes are crazed and wide with energy and power. And behind him stands a wraith. A figure with a veiled head, long, dripping robes. All you can see is a flash of a smile from their elven face underneath. And with that, Teddy, you hit the floor on the salt flats. Just in time, you pull yourself up, mind swimming with these images, just in time to see the cracks in the salt flat forming underneath Shraka, who looks you in the eyes with pain as they fall through into a crevasse. And we'll pick it up next time when I find the crevasse.
Oh my god. Dude, Laurie, this is so good.
Yeah. 5 years, man. 5 years.